Mini episode 1923 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1923. Have with you here today two of your favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Ben Chu. Ben, our chief hoops analyst at FDH. We are here today to break down the NBA draft lottery for 2026, as well as the combine. Of course, Ben and I were live here in real time covering the lottery on Sunday. We have some subsequent thoughts on that, some thoughts on how the combine has played out for a couple of the different players. And I think in looking at this here, I always like to peg, now that we're into the 20th century, as it were, of mini episode numbers here, number 1923. I will say that one of our fellow FDH Lounge dignitaries and fellow Sports Talk Network alums, this was maybe about 2 years ago or so, myself and Tony Mazur convening on the show here to celebrate whenever was the 150th birthday of the man who was the favorite president of both of us, Calvin Coolidge, who, of course, assumed the presidency in 1923. And I would say, if you're the Washington Wizards, it was the Calvin Coolidge of draft outcomes for you, getting the first pick in the lottery, Ben Chu.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very true fact. It's going to be very interesting for the top three in this scenario as well.
Yep. It really is, and some talk already about Washington potentially trading down, which seems weird because we talked about it the other day and how good a fit A.J. DeBanza could be with their roster as well. As again, a little bit duplicative potentially if you take Darren Peterson. Now, again, he's going to elbow anybody else right out the way, whether it be Trey Johnson
and
or anybody else.
Right there. Again, Krayshawn George has played really well this year, but they do not have a number one shooting guard at this time.
Yeah. So now we talked about this during the draft lottery show that, of course, for the top players in the draft, that's one of these things where, again, if you're in a situation, where it's a no-brainer, certainly you throw value, you know, not value, but positional need out the window. But this is a thing where for Washington, DeBanza fits very well. And again, fits a need that they have in that spot. So it's a thing with this whole notion of like, well, he might be the guy we like the most, but we could extract a bunch of assets out of Utah going to number two. Like, this is the whole thing of like, how long has Washington waited to win the lottery? And it's one of these things of like, it reminds you of like the cliche story of, you know, like the man who marries the beautiful woman, but then goes around saying to his friends, well, if you eat steak every night, you get sick of eating steak. Like, I think it's a little too soon for Washington to be jaded. Okay. Take what you got, fellas. It fell in your lap. You got the number one pick. Look, if Darren Peterson is legitimately who they think should be the player, then okay, work it out with Utah. You know how desperately they're jonesing to get up to number one. But if you think DeBanza's your guy, stay there. Don't get cute with it. You have decades of misery building up to get to this spot. You got to this spot. Don't do anything stupid now is what I would say.
Right. And again, we'll see what Washington determines in terms of the assets available, as you guess, Rick. Because they have the Wizards this year were, let's be honest, they were a dumpster fire.
Sure.
But they were a dumpster fire with a lot of really talented players, guys like Krayshawn George, Buck Arrington, Alex Saar, and Will Riley for most of this year. So, and then, of course, as we all know, you have Trae Young and Anthony Davis. We don't know what the asset discussion is going to be with them at some point, too. So,
right.
I would make the argument Washington, who their GM right in this time is Michael Winger. It should be a scenario where he should consider all options because he knows he's in a unique scenario where a team at is literally the pick below them really likes the top player in the draft. And we know from Ryan Smith, and who was, you know, a Utah alum within that timeline and a BYU alum on some level.
Sure.
Within this area. So they want that. They want him. So if they could, you know, extract a guy like Walker Kessler, or if they could get some additional picks in the future, I'll be honest with you, it's a top three heavy draft, but we have no clue who's going to be the best player right now.
Well, the one of the other things too is that I saw a comp the other day that made me scratch my head, and it was just basically like, I got to bring this up to Ben. I don't remember where this was, but I saw a comp between Darren Peterson and in terms of, you know, who he would profile with, Ray Allen. And I'm kind of like, isn't he more athletic than Ray Allen? Like, Ray Allen was a Hall of Fame player. He's an all-time great. But in terms of the amount of hype that's been on Peterson, justifiably so, when he's healthy, and that is the caveat, when he's available, it feels like it's selling him short, because Ray Allen is a great player and a Hall of Famer, but Peterson profiles potentially as an all-time great. So I don't know. Do you find that comp as weird as I do?
A little bit, yeah. I'd also say, too, that at UConn, Ray Allen was a more ready-made shooter than Darren Peterson in those times.
Yeah, so it offsets a little bit there, yeah. Athleticism, right, and shooting. So in both ways.
Like, a lot of people do tend to forget, like, prime Milwaukee Ray Allen was an athletic player.
He was. Yes, he was. And I'm not meaning to demean his athleticism there, but he's not the type of player I think of when I think of that as far as stylistically. Right. That's where it seemed a little bit weird. You got, of course, Cameron Boozer, who's the consensus third best player overall. I keep seeing him get compared to a former Cav. No, not his father, Kevin Love. Kevin Love comes up a lot in the comparison.
And I mean, I feel like at least with Cameron Boozer, it feels like Memphis is the perfect fit for him. And I think just because of his performance in the NCAA tournament, I think a lot of other teams are not going to risk coming up to get him. Now, obviously, Memphis, excuse me, Rick, they have a very unique situation. They could offload Ja Morant in the offseason. And then on top of that, too, they have opportunities. They have Cedric Howard, Scottie Pippen Jr., Zach Edey. Mm-hmm. So this is a young team with a lot of talent. And they saw Gigi Jackson as well. So it's going to be interesting. I feel like Boozer's almost a slam dunk, though, because I feel like he's a guy who will get you 18-8 regardless of any scenario. And I feel like for Memphis, after trading Jaren Jackson Jr. to Utah, it makes a lot of sense.
It really does, yeah. And as far as the consensus, seemingly consensus, fourth pick overall now, Caleb Wilson, some thoughts there. I'm seeing a lot of things like, well, maybe he should go higher than that. Maybe he should go in the top three, which I find to be odd. And then this thing that was drawing oohs and ahs over the weekend, this workout video that came out, and very impressive athletically speaking. I mean, if you wanted to make a case that this guy could be one of the greatest athletes in the NBA on day one, this video would seem to back that up, at least as far as the dunks and everything like that. But like me, if you showed me a video of this guy consistently swishing from distance, then I'd be like, right, okay, now we're talking. Like it's building him up in the area that we already know that he's strong. But it's a thing where, again, he'd be mentioned in the same breath of these other guys if he could, well, shoot better than he does presently. Right. And that's the whole thing with it being a work in progress. So I get the guy being a top five pick overall. Again, you and I both as sold as we are on Darius Akuff Jr. I think it's still a stretch.
I would argue that Kingston Fleming's a better player.
Kingston Fleming's potentially as well. So it's like, yeah, like this thing with Wilson, like as far as like the marketing, like from his camp, I think it's all wrong. Now it's a thing of like, it might take a lot of editing and everything like that, but you know, put out a video of him hitting a bunch of swishes from distance. That's the thing that's going to convince everybody. If you're going to convince anybody that you're worthy of going in the top three, and again, this is silly season. I don't think anybody should be moving up or down based off of where, you know, that. But it's like, it seemed odd to me that was out there going viral. And that, again, that there were as many credulous people like, oh my God, he might be the top player in the draft. Like, this is 2026. Yeah, we're still getting, you know, amused and aroused and whatever by dunk videos. Like, what are we doing here? It's not the 1970s, Ben Chu.
No. And again, like, we know a lot of his player comps, guys like Jermaine O'Neal, guys like Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
But again, I want to play revisionist history. There was also another guy that the Chicago Bulls took who had a very similar body. He was a little bit shorter. And Patrick Williams, who never panned out. So,
yeah.
Again, I understand why people who love, like, tall, athletic players, especially at the small forward, power forward position, and I don't want to disrespect Caleb Wilson because he had a great year at University of North Carolina.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the antithetical scenario we've seen before where a GM or a team falls in love with a guy who's super athletic, who can't really shoot.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong? We discussed this off air. And again, too, I think the problem, and this is, it's still crazy to think that we're still talking about this, because we've seen in draft class since the year 2000 onward, Rick, where a lot of these super athletic guys get drafted, but then they're out of the league because they can't shoot.
Right. And that's the thing. It's going to take a lot in the way of development. And it's a thing where, again, it could be really tough going to Chicago, because it's a thing where, again, the period of time from the end of when Krumz Kraus, God rest his soul, broke up the Bulls, to from then to Derrick Rose, they were really in the wilderness. And then from when Rose blew out his knee the first time, it was really never the same. So they've waited. They've now, again, you know, myself as a Cavs fan, just because we won a title more recently than them, I wouldn't say that my heart bleeds for the Bulls fans of the world, six titles in the 90s. But it's a thing where I'm talking about the expectations here, and I'm talking about the hope of a city that really loves basketball. And they're sitting here, okay, they've finally blown out, you know, some of the last remnants of the regime that the Reinsdorf folks have had in there for decades now, that really ultimately has not been successful as far as turning this franchise around. And boom, right off the bat, you get the four pick in a really good draft. And so they're all sitting there, the Bulls fans, like, oh, here we go. Like, that's the whole thing that I would worry a little bit for the kid, what the expectations would be, because I think – as far as like him getting to the level that he can get to, which would be, you know, consistently an all NBA player, he's a developmental guy at best for getting to that level, unlike the first three, which is why the first three are going to go in front of him.
And one of my big things too, Rick, is we've seen this with a handful of players over the last 10 years where a team will take a chance on a super athletic guy. And sometimes it does hit. We've seen it before. Guys like Giannis, guys like Kawhi Leonard will get up to that point. But we've also used the rules, like, if there is a player that is not a ready-made three-point shooter in today's NBA from the small forward, power forward position, unless your name is Colin Murray Boyles, it's not a high amount of guys who are successful in the current league at this time.
Yeah, that is true. So that is something we're going to have to keep an eye on. And you had mentioned Fleming's there. That's a good sort of header into getting into some of the combine talk here. Some of the winners and losers of the combine, as it were. Again, Fleming's, I think, did well, I think, in a number of different areas, but certainly the measurements among them. Braden Burry's as well, showing up as being a legitimate, I think, combo guard prospect. Both of the CCs seem to be among the winners here. Cameron Carr and Chris Sinek seem to be way up there. A couple of the Michigan guys, Adey Mara, and then especially Moraes Johnson seem to be the winners in perception as well. Tyler Tanner, another one of the winners. So there were players that did advance their stock in the draft combine and almost certainly lock in, first of all, first round status, and then potentially being somewhere in the teens, potentially even with as much flux as there might be, maybe the cusp of the lottery. And I'm forgetting Alex Caravan in there as well, but he was another guy who, again, he was one of the best shooters at the combine. So that's a thing where, again, you know, really a guy who can profile as far as being a guy who can help both immediately and down the road with his ability to do that. So these are the ones that really kind of made the scouts, smile the most, it seems like, as they came away from the combine.
Yeah, and I feel like the three players, Rick, that probably did the best, obviously Cameron Carr is a guy I love. He was one of the few players playing on the draft combine. And you could just tell his athleticism showed up on watching that five-on-five scenario. And you can tell, too, that, again, he was projected to be a late, a mid to late first-round draft pick. But I could totally see a scenario where someone, whether it's, a team within 10 to 14, talks himself into him because he has good size. And he's also a guy who also has, at 6'4", he also has a 7-foot wingspan, Rick. For a guard, that doesn't usually happen. And we've seen, at least in recent memory, a lot of players like Keon Ellis, a lot of guys who are shorter, but if you have a higher level of wingspan, you can defend much better.
Yes.
And I feel like, too, especially with Michigan, I feel like the biggest winner of this week is Morris Johnson Jr., clearly.
Yeah.
6'9", 7'3", and a half wingspan, standing reach of 8'11". Just, he is the type of guy who has the physical tools, very similar to like a Bobby Portis or Wendell Carter Jr., a guy who could be a long-term either starter or rotation guy, who could make plays and do it. Like, and also a lot of his athleticism showed up on a lot of the drills that he did.
It did, and it's interesting. So we're talking about these guys here, him and Mara. The name that we're not mentioning is the guy who was slated to go potentially decently above both of them at his back end of the lottery, Yaxel Landeberg. And it's a thing where I'll be interested to see in this day and age the whole thing of, like, one of the things that seems to be getting held against him. This is something that I see more so in the baseball world when they're talking about prospects, like, he was one of the oldest guys in Double-A last year. Like, that's a thing in baseball where they really kind of regard that as being a science. I'm not so sure in this day and age that it's a thing where coming into the NBA, it's going to be a situation where he's going to be up against it here. It's not like a Brandon Whedon situation where he was like a 28-year-old rookie quarterback for the Browns. So the fact that that seems to be one of the main things being held against him at this point is something I find interesting, and something where I think he has the potential, if he does well, which I think may well be the case, to kind of knock down walls for other players subsequently in the NIL era, when you're going to see guys sticking around in college longer. So all but the elite guys. The elite guys are still going to come out after the first year, but you're going to see a lot of other guys, again, we didn't tend to see a lot of guys that were upperclassmen or even, God forbid, seniors who would be going in the lottery in years past. And I think we're going to be getting used to seeing that in the years to come here as they continue to develop more fully in college.
And, Rick, one of the other players that has had a very good combine, as you can guess, is Chris Cenac of Houston.
Yes.
In terms of his measurables at 6'10", 7'5", wingspan, standing reach of 9.5". It feels like, in a lot of people, again, we are not going to make the comparison early, but there was a handful of mock drafters, Redditors, people on social media talking about he could be a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr.
I've seen that, yes.
And I feel like, to me at least, if you can get him in a late round, or at least, in the tail end of the lottery timeline, it may be worth it, because we've seen guys like Jaren Jackson Jr. be very impactful in play.
Yes. Yes, that would be really something if that ended up happening, because that's a pretty elevated comp to put on somebody that, again, certainly wasn't even really locked into being probably a top 20 even prospect coming into this at this point. But this is where,
I feel like, too, Rick, a lot of these scouts, and I've heard some rumors at least, that guys like Kingston Flemings and guys like Chris Cenac are probably going to get drafted sooner than people think.
Yeah.
But it's going to be determined in terms of who likes them at this period of time.
You know what? Let us hope that Cenac ends up going tail end of the lottery or a pick or two later, because I'm looking at the first round here. OKC at 17, San Antonio at 20. We don't need that to happen, Ben Chu. The league doesn't need that to happen if he is going to become somebody on that
level. And again, too, as we all know, draft combine is silly season, but
it is.
The one thing we know, too, like the Bansia had a 42-inch vertical. I give a lot of credit, to Cameron Carr, who, again, was a later round draft pick in this timeline. And a lot of people like from Baylor, like, no one really knew what to think of him, but at least in terms of what I saw today in his five-on-five game, led his team in scoring, was efficient from the field, made assists, and I hate to say it, I have the Kevin O'Connor crush on Cameron Carr right now. So here we go. We're going to see what happens.
Here's the thing, too. Like, if you would have told somebody at the beginning of the season, because this was probably the worst year that Baylor's had in the last couple of years. So to tell them, like, you're going to come to Baylor and Baylor's going to have this kind of a year, but you're going to raise your draft profile to this degree. You wouldn't have believed it, probably.
One big thing, too, Rick, is that I think we all know the NBA is trending to – it's okay if a guy's a little bit short, but if his wingspan is up there at 7 foot,
that helps.
You're at least playing good enough defense at that period of time.
That absolutely helps. It does. And again, with Cenac and Fleming's a real good combine for the Houston guys. They come out of it pretty well. So the Houston guys, the Michigan guys,
I was just going to say,
Houston and Michigan, teams that were in the national championship game in the last 2 years, so no surprise that those programs would be represented here, but guys that didn't have it as well, Amari Allen, Allen Graves, who had been, he was the big analytical darling coming into this, not anymore. I was disappointed to see that it was a tough combine for Joshua Jefferson. That's a guy whose game I thought might translate well to the pros. And the guy that everybody is saying should go back, should withdraw immediately, Cole Pete, at this point.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
So,
and I think with Cole Pete, the bigger question, and we had this during the Arizona regular season, Rick, is that we didn't know how good of a shooter he was during this timeline. And he did not improve during the combine end. I'll be honest, the whole Amari Allen situation is going to be very interesting to follow because he actually did not have a bad combine overall. He was pretty decent. The problem was is that when he was listed at, I just use rules in terms of when a guy is listed in terms of a certain height at Alabama.
Yeah.
And you come in at 6, you say he's 6'8", and then he comes in at 6'5". That's a 3-inch difference. And in today's NBA, that is dramatic.
I mean, that's a thing where, it's not a good sign at the combine when they measure you. And then as soon as they do, the guy holding the clipboard turns to you and says, bro, were you playing in platform shoes in college?
Yeah.
So that's.
And again, Allen is still a very good player, but.
Yeah.
I guess in the SEC, you can give 2 or 3 inches. Like we all do sometimes in life, Rick Morris. Just add some inches. That's all we need to do. Right? Just get those dating profiles. You're 6 foot at the end of the day, right?
Times in life when we've kayfabed inches. I'm going to leave that one laying there for the moment. But Joshua Jefferson.
I would say, too, Rick, is we've. Again, we know the NBA combine, this is not the NFL combine, it's a different scenario.
Right.
But as we are starting to see in terms of analyzing how a player plays in terms of some of the agility drills, in terms of pure shooting, I do think the NBA combine has definitely improved. And we've seen guys like last year, Hanson Yang was one of the guys who was barely on anyone's radar and then got into the top 16 in that timeline. So I do feel like there is a legitimate scenario, like some of these guys could bounce to the tail end of the lottery based on how they've played so far this week in Chicago.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You get this fluidity once you start to get past, and I've started doing some of the work for what is going to be in the next couple of weeks. You'll find it on the main page at fantasydrafthealth.com, Pro Hoops Draftology 2026. And so starting to go through, starting to work on the player ratings and everything. And it seems like the locks on this right now, like right now I've got Hannah Steinbach at 13, and he seems like probably the last guy that is, if not a lock for the lottery, that, I would be willing to bet a decent amount of money would go in the lottery. Interestingly, I already had Chris Cienak at 15, so I think he's pretty much locked himself in at this point. And I had Mara at 17 and Cameron Carr at 18. So Right. These are all guys who could advance to that, who will be probably at least either 14 or 15 at this point. That could come at the expense of some of the other guys in that ballpark, Kareem Lopez, Jaden Quintance, who we're still waiting to see like what he's going to look like, post injury rehabilitation, et cetera. So yeah, like the fluidity really to me started at the back end of the lottery, probably 14 and below. And you're seeing some of the guys who are right on the cusp of that, in my estimation,
right,
who have probably played their way into being strong contenders for being in the lottery. So that's a situation now where maybe it's now like there's a strong consensus on who the guys are through about 16 or 17 now, basically. But somewhere in there, you start to get to, and we see it in the NFL, you start to get to a point of where guys – And I think that this is probably, I think the last 2 years in the NFL, it's been proportionally at about the same place of where you start to get the guys who they're either late first rounders or early second rounders. And that means some of them will actually go in the mid rounds if they're going like mid of the round, if they're going before 20. But you start to get to where there's the real fluidity coming in here. And I think, again, that's where some of the winners that we're talking about here, they basically escaped that muck, if you will, and they basically kind of lock themselves up into that tier. But then that tier that's below them of the guys that are like, pick me, you know, that tier could go on for a while. That could be maybe like right, 17 to about 32, 33 potentially.
Yeah, and we also know, too, like the combine, let's be honest, the top players, we look at the data and we look at their, you know, verticals and all these other things. But I feel like the NBA Combine is the one thing for players who are on the late first round, second round bubble to prove themselves. And if you play well in these 5-on-5 games and do well in terms of a lot of the tests, you're going to get yourself out there.
You are. And I would say also, too, in terms of success stories in a way that not exactly the kind of success that players are going to want to hear about in this moment, right, but as far as – you know, like the silver lining in the cloud, so to speak, that I talked about it before with the XL Landeberg. This is a guy where when I was doing the draft prep about this time last year, he was on the list there and he was factoring in probably somewhere in about the 20s or so. And then it was like, hey, not only should I go back to college, I'm going to get in the portal. Oh, hey, look, Michigan, they're an up and coming program under Dusty May. They want me. And look at him now, a guy who probably is not going to go any lower than 12 or 13 in the draft. This guy advanced probably a cool 15 spots in the last year, won a national championship in between. So for anybody that's counseling these kids to come back into the draft or go back to school, wait another year, there's a real success story to point to. Like, hey, you're not going to want to hear this in this moment, but this is where you're going to be if it's right now. Look at this guy over there. Maybe go talk to him before you both leave town and he can tell you how it went. And it's a thing where I can't remember the last time that there was a success story delayed, albeit of this level, but it's like, if you were to tell Landeberg a year ago, you know, like, or if you were to ask him, like, what would you want to happen in the next year to make going back to school worth it? It would be everything that's happened to him in the time since. So Right. You and I have looked at the changing landscape of college basketball as well as college football the last couple of years and NIL and the way that it influences it. And this is one of the things here, too, that, again, you can still go back to school and get paid, or get paid openly, as the cynics might say, differentiating from the past. But it's a thing where you can have it work out. And this is now the ultimate success story of what can happen if you go back and you play your cards right.
And I think we're also in a changing timeline for NBA officials and GMs. And we're also in the timeline too, Rick. Like, this is the last NBA draft lottery based on the old format. So we're going to probably see some different shifts in terms of front offices. One discussion that I was reading about over the last week is that a lot of front offices may not trade early round picks because there's a possibility that they're not going to get better odds to getting better players. So
yep.
We're going to see what ends up happening with, you know, the entire sort of draft lottery over time. I know nothing's been official yet, but I feel like unless something crazy occurs, it feels like the 3-2-1 format's going to be what we're going to expect moving forward.
Yeah, and there was, I think I've made this point before, but I want to circle back to this again just to kind of pound my fist on this point that I can't remember who the guy was that I heard on Fox Sports Radio when I was in my car over the weekend, and it's just as well. I'm not looking to throw anybody specifically under the bus, but this was a heinous take, the whole thing of like such a surface level kind of take of like, well, you can't do it where if the three worst teams in the league don't have, you know, or they have worse odds, like then they're just going to stay the worst teams and it's always going to be, and it's like, no. Sucking that bad is a choice. We've seen it. We've seen it with the tanking. And it's a thing where, again, any of the teams that were there, like Washington, you know, Utah, Sacramento, like if you told them coming into the year that you should try and get to 4 or 5 to increase your odds, they could have done it probably. Maybe not Sacramento. Sacramento is just really poisoned. But, I mean, that's a thing where it's like there's not
we discussed this, Rick. Utah had enough talent to at least be within that 4-8 range.
Yes. I mean, and that's the whole thing too, is that like Washington, and interestingly, Washington and Utah with the trades for Jaren Jackson, Trae Young, Anthony Davis, they were getting to the point where like they were going to start to get more serious for this upcoming year. Cause I think they were gambling that in a draft that is deep with really potentially a couple potentially great players at the top, that they were going to get one of these guys and one way or another and be in position to start building for next year. So, like, there's nothing that would have stopped them from making these trades earlier. It's a choice. You have to remember, it's a choice to be in that spot where you're at. If you want to prioritize being better, you can do that. And we've joked about this on the show over a period of time with Jordy Fernandez with Brooklyn, that he's been like too good of a coach for them, because it's like, you know, the front office is like, there's no way we're not going to lose 70 games with this roster. And he's like, want to bet? So that's where, you know, it is a choice. Like, what's Brooklyn going to look like once the front office basically takes the reins off? And again, the players that they have there, they're, In a way, they're reminiscent of the Cavs teams of a couple of years ago, except I'm not even sure they have anybody, you know, necessarily like, you know, certainly Sexton, let alone Garland. But like, I used to talk about this at like 4-10, they're fine. They just don't have 1-3, and 1-3 are the most important parts that there is.
And like, we saw like Brooklyn this year too, Rick, like Michael Porter Jr. was playing really well and then fell off at the end of the season.
He did, but it's like, you look at it last year and like, the 5 first round picks they had. I mean, none of those guys are stars or going to become anywhere close.
Emmitt,
but it's like
the best narrative of all those guys.
Yeah, but like,
but they, everybody else was okay, or
they look like functional rotation players. I mean, Brooklyn at this point, you could argue, has a good chunk of their rotation in place, which sounds odd for a team that's been as bad as they are. But that's the whole thing. Is that now you start filling in the pieces around it, and Brooklyn could have, you know, a year ago could have gone out. If somebody had said, get the 4, get the 5, whatever. First of all, do it so that the coach is allowed to get the most out of the team. Second of all, give the coach a little more to work with. So this entire narrative that, like, these teams are fated to be awful and they need that hand up, you know, from the league is not true. It's not true. Being that bad was a choice. And the fact that I don't know if the new system's going to work. My guess is they're going to have to tweak it probably more than once. That's how these things usually work. But getting rid of the incentive to tank is a good thing. It's going to lead to a better product. This was the nadir of tanking.
And Rick, I don't mind if I interrupt here.
Yeah.
But we know most American pro sports do not have a relegation system at this period of time. They don't.
Right.
But what we've seen in like European football and the Premier League and some of these other leagues, relegation is actually a good thing because that puts pressure on front offices and players to play well. And I would think one of the biggest criticisms I hear about the NBA, and this sounds like, half these games don't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think it's a positive at the end of the day. And again, relegation. The one thing, and I know we've discussed this off air, I just want it to be a fair percentage for those top three teams.
Right.
I'm not saying that they need to get the same odds as 4 through 10, but at the current timeline, based off of the rumors we've heard, they're on the same level as play-in teams. I'm like, that's not acceptable, in my opinion.
I would agree, too. The play-in teams should be – play-in teams should be the third tier because you don't want to incentivize dumping the play-in games. You don't want to incentivize that beyond what's already there. They should be the third tier as opposed to tied for the 1 through 3. That's where the overreaction kicks in as far as what you want to do. The whole notion of
on it, because at the end of the day, it's like we want to give play-in teams a chance to jump up in the lottery, but it should not be in forms of a team of three teams who probably had 25 wins or less.
Well, the funny thing is, in terms of relegation, I'm getting this mental picture in my head here that, like, if there was relegation, that, like, but there might be two places in Cleveland I could go to watch NBA games. Public Hall with the Cleveland Charge. Imagine that. Charge versus Cavs, the new rivalry in a Central Division.
Of course, relegation exists in the year when the Sonics can come back at some point, obviously, you know.
That's right.
But I will say, too, it's like, I know a lot of people tweak Adam Silver about changes, but I actually think this is a decent scenario as long as the percentages work out.
I think so as well. And again, they're probably going to have to tweak it. But again, they've made it more so a situation. And we're going to see, again, the teams at the bottom next year actually trying to claw up some spots here. And again, for what I was talking about before, of like, this is what they could have done before. Now you're going to see those teams trying to make trades to get up into that 4 through 10 level. And so that's where, again, you've managed to.
I'll comment on this too. Is like, we saw this season an incredible amount of high level injury reports for these NBA teams.
Yep.
Literally guys who would be out for weeks, even though most of us probably made the assessment that they were either healthy or close enough to healthy to play in a game.
That's right. So you got it playing out that way. We're going to see that going forward. And as far as the lottery went, as we said during the live lottery show, we'll be back on draft night and back in the fold with one of our old cohorts from the Sports Talk Network rejoining us for the broadcast, a crossover from his own ongoing broadcast that he's been doing. So
we'll keeping it a secret?
Well, I haven't even divulged to you yet. You kind of told me that you wanted it to be a surprise for a period of time. So yeah, it's like you're as much potentially in the dark as anybody else. I did laugh when you guessed Tony Mazur because I was like, Mazur doesn't give a crap about the NBA right now.
Talk about the NBA. So
I have yet to text him that. He's gonna laugh his nuts off. Like Ben thought I would be interested enough to be on draft night. You know, that's it. It'd be fun to do it with Tony, but I think he'd be crapping over the whole thing of an NBA draft show.
I want to see who it is, and I feel like I know who it is, but I also want to be surprised, Rick Morris.
Okay.
It's like, we need to tease it for the viewers out there.
Yeah. Like,
in YouTube it's not, land, we need to tease it.
It's not so much that I'm trying to tease it for the viewers as I'm trying to respect your thing of like, let me keep it a surprise a little longer. So I'm trying to respect my co-host's preference for draft night. But yeah, so a third man in the booth that's going to make it more fun. And by the way, and I think the gig, the gig's going to be up once we get to the draft guide because said individual is submitting a mock draft that will be going in the draft guide. Actually sent it in already, and I need to get back to him. Like, yo, if you want to give me another one in a couple weeks, feel free because I'm not doing mine for another couple weeks.
Like I said, don't send me any draft guides, Rick. I want to be surprised on the 3-hour telecast going to do. So
there you go. There you go. Well, it will be a reunion for you, Ben Chu, from the old Sports Talk Network days. So that will be something to look forward to. But great, as always, to talk the hoops with you here. Thanks so much for
being available. Rick, before we go, I did want to mention one other player.
Absolutely. What do you got?
And I have to say this because he's from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Jacoby Gillespie had a fantastic showing at the combine today. I know he's a tad undersized at the position, but he picked up 26 points on 15% field goal shooting, 33 from three. So he's a guy who's later in the second round, but I would not be surprised based on his combine performance if he jumps up potentially. It's like mid-second round, early second round scenario.
I'll be beating the drums for him on draft night, definitely. So yeah, this is going to be a lot to look forward to here as we get into late June. And of course, we'll be back on with you before then to preview the NBA Finals and then also to recap the NBA Finals. So we'll have a few things basketball-wise with you in between now and then. And actually, the draft will be right around the timeline of when the final season of the Bear comes out. So we're going to have a lot to talk about with you by the end of June, early July. That's right. Exactly. So we'll have a lot to look forward to. But again, thank you so much for being here, Ben Chu. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1923.